Welcome back to New Books in Political Science. Again, my name is Heath Brown. Today I'll be talking with John Campbell, who is the co-author with Uwe Petersen of The National Origins of Policy Ideas, Knowledge Regimes in the United States, France, Germany, and Denmark, published by Princeton University Press. John Campbell, how are you doing today?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing great, and as we've talked about and emailed a little bit about, this is a book that I really enjoyed because it's in an area of research that I do. So I know a little bit about you, but before we get to your book, maybe you can tell us just a little bit about yourself and about your co-author.
Sure. I'm a professor of sociology at Dartmouth College. I'm also a professor of political economy at the Copenhagen Business School in the Department of Business and Politics, where my co-author, Uwe Petersen, is also a professor of comparative political economy.
Yeah, and your backgrounds, and I can imagine either coming together, has resulted in some of the framing of this book. How did you two come together to work on this book? Is this the first collaboration or the first of the one of many? Tell us about sort of the origins of the book.
Well, Uwe and I have been working together on projects for almost 20 years now. And this, in a sense, is a culmination of things we've been talking about for a while. It started, actually, in a conversation that he and I had when we were taking a stroll near his home in Denmark several years ago. And we decided that we would write a short little paper on ideas and politics. And to be blunt, it got a little bit out of hand, and so we ended up writing a book instead.
Yeah, some great books are start just as an idea for a paper, and those good papers turn into really interesting books. As I mentioned, I enjoyed the book a lot. Let's talk about some abstract notions, because I think, you know, over the last couple of years we've had a couple of people on to talk about policy ideas and where they come from. There's been a lot of interest in where the ideas of neoliberalism, for instance, come from. So let's talk about how you conceptualize this at the start of the book. So in theory, where do policy ideas come from in democratic countries?
Well, first we need to make a distinction between the ideas that actually affect policymakers and the policymaking process and the origins of policy ideas, full stop, because clearly it's not the case that all policy ideas that get floated actually have an impact. We discussed that a little bit in the book. But our interest is basically trying to find out as much as we can in a comparative, that is, cross-national context, about where policy ideas of all sorts come from. And by that we mean policy recommendations and the data analysis and thinking that lies behind them. So we take a fairly broad view of policy ideas. There is a huge literature over the last 15 years, 20 years or so, in political science about, quote, ideas and politics, as I think you know. And it's very much pitched at trying to explain the conditions under which ideas, as opposed to material interests or the pursuit of rational interests, impacts the policy process. And that's fine, and we accept the fact from the outset that policy ideas sometimes do have big impacts. But as you said before, we want to find out where these ideas are coming from in the first place and to do it in a comparative context. So that's the starting point for the project.
Yeah, and that is really one of the differences between this book and some others. The idea of where policy ideas come from has been studying very much on a nation-by-nation basis, but you do this in a cross-national way. I wonder if you talk a little bit of how you chose the four countries in your study. What makes these four interesting?
Well, there are personal reasons, and there are also more scholarly reasons. Uwe is a Dane. I'm an American, so there are two cases right there. Very different countries in the sense that the United States is typically cast as a so-called liberal market economy with a relatively weak state. Denmark, in a sense, is the paradigmatic opposite. It's a much more coordinated market economy with a stronger state. Denmark's also small. The United States is a big hegemonic power, and we think that may have important differences in terms of how policy ideas are generated. The other two countries, France and Germany, we picked those because France is an extremely strong state historically. sometimes described as a statist political economy. Germany is the prototypical corporatist political economy. So we wanted some variation, case-based variation across these countries. So we have a liberal American economy, statist France, corporatist Germany, and an extremely coordinated, some would call it a negotiated economy in the Danish case. So three big ones and a little one as well.
No, I think a lot of people in our audience will know the U.S. system somewhat well. It's sort of noted by the number of private research organizations and increasingly competitive and politicized arena. But I think these other countries would be quite new. They're somewhat new to me. France in particular drew my attention. I wonder if you'd describe a little bit about the system in France and some of the nooks and crannies, which I thought were interesting. I was also interested just how you came upon some of this real detailed information, the types of interviews, where the interviews were done, and also how this has changed over time in France.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of questions right there. But in a nutshell, France is the statist economy, and historically, what we call the knowledge regime, that is the set of policy research organizations and the institutions that govern their activities. It's a statist, state-dominated knowledge regime. So historically, within the state apparatus at the national level, it's a very centralized system in France, of course, you had all the major policy research organizations, very centralized. They had all the data. They had all the analytic expertise. They were close to power. They made all the policy recommendations, for better or worse. Over time, things have changed somewhat, although in a very statist character. What we try to do in the book is examine how each of these four national knowledge regimes has changed in response to the end of the golden age of post-war 20th century capitalism. That is, the onset of stagflation, rise of globalization, and all the attendant problems and challenges go along with that. And in the French case, what happened was, after a while, sort of late 1970s or so, French policymakers, particularly in the prime minister's office, began to realize that the conventional thinking from their policy research organizations, which was very Keynesian, was no longer providing them with the information, the analysis, the advice that they thought that they needed for France to do well in an increasingly global economy. And so what they did was they started to spend money to facilitate and encourage what we would call semi-public policy research organizations to develop, somewhat outside the purview of the state, but still funded with state money. And the idea there explicitly was to try and generate some fresh thinking, some new ideas that might kind of reinvigorate the policy discourse and put the French political economy in a more competitive position internationally. Now, I should say, in response to your other question about the nature of the data that we used here, very quickly, we spent a lot of time in all four countries interviewing people, usually presidents, chief operating officers, senior research scientists. I think we talked to people in about 75 different policy research organizations over a span of about a year and a half or 2 years. So a lot of interview data was brought to bear on this project, as well as annual reports and policy documents from all the different organizations that we spoke with. It was a very labor-intensive process.
Yeah, and let's also make clear that your focus very much was in the economics realm.
That's right.
I know many of these organizations, many of these different types of organizations work on different issues, but you were very much focused on economics. Now, given these changes in the French system, how does that affect how policy ideas permeate into the policymaking process, particularly compared to Germany and Denmark that have these other systems in place?
Well, it's interesting. This gets to the question of influence, which is one that we did not initially set out to study, but kept coming back at us as we would talk about this to other people. People would say, what's the influence here? How does that work? And in the French case, the influence is pretty straightforward, particularly insofar as the Prime Minister's office is concerned. Prime Minister's office in 1997 set up what is tantamount to the Council of Economic Advisers in the United States to advise it, set up some other policy research organizations to do much the same thing. So it was a fairly straight-ahead, direct channel of access that was constructed there. In the German case, corporatist Germany, a very different kind of a process where the Ministry of Economics and Technology, for example, organizes a joint economic report process. This joint economic report is put together by a select group of elite and very academically oriented policy research organizations. These organizations have to compete to be essentially hired into the joint economic policy process. And twice a year, this group of four, five, or six organizations has to come together and meet and do two things. It has to come up with a consensus analysis of where the German economy is going in the next 6 months or a year or so. And secondly, they have to come up with a consensus set of policy recommendations, which are both then transmitted to the ministry and then go into the decision-making process to some extent or the other. So it's a very consensus-oriented kind of process with, in effect, semi-public, independent organizations outside the state doing the heavy lifting on this. The Danish case is a little bit different. Denmark is a little bit of a hybrid. It's a little bit German. It's a little bit French. You have a tremendous amount, and remember, this is a small country where everybody knows everybody. All the action is in Copenhagen, whereas in the German case, we visited, I think, six or seven different cities because it's spread out all over the place as a result of the federalist structure of the German state. But in the Danish case, you have a sort of super consensus-oriented process, a negotiated process, where, for example, the Danish Economic Council, which is equivalent to our Council of Economic Advisers, is a group of representatives from the labor unions, the business associations, environmental groups, and is run and orchestrated by a group of four economists referred to as the wise men, although there's a woman on the council now. And they produce reports annually, sometimes biannually, about all facets of the Danish economy. This is then sent up the line to the ministries. Parliamentarians have a look at it. But it's a process where all the social actors, all the social partners, sit at the table and have input and discussion. So these are very different kinds of processes that we see across these four different countries in terms of how they at least try to influence the policymaking process.
And in the book, there's numerous details and aspects of this that we're not even touching on. But your book is more than just these case studies, country case studies. In the second part of the book, you put these cases together in a couple of interesting ways. I mean, so in general, are these countries coming together in their approach, or are the cross-national patterns becoming more ingrained and entrenching very different systems? What are we seeing here?
Well, we see a bit of both, to be perfectly honest. These are one of the two questions that guided the research when we went into it. To what extent are we seeing convergence in terms of how policy ideas are produced and disseminated to policymakers? Are we seeing convergence within as well as across these national cases or not? And essentially what we find is that in some respects, there's a certain amount of convergence that goes on. For example, in terms of methods of economic analysis, perhaps not surprising, most of these research organizations across the four countries are more inclined now to work with big data sets, more sophisticated econometric methodologies, increasingly inclined to do more cross-national kinds of research. So there's been a certain amount of convergence on analytic technique. There's also been a certain amount of convergence in terms of how these organizations go about trying to disseminate this information to policymakers in such a way that it'll have some kind of an impact on the policymaking process. They've shifted, for example, to writing very short policy briefs. They've tried to direct more attention to reaching out to the media, recognizing that politicians pay attention to the media, and if the media picks up on something, politicians are more likely to sit up and take note. So there's been some convergence in that regard, both within and across countries. On the other hand, there's still a lot of national specificity to what these foreknowledge regimes look like in terms of their structure in particular and how they operate. The United States still tends to have a lot of privately funded policy research organizations that are very competitive and to an increasing extent, for better or worse, rather adversarial in the tactics that they pursue. The Germans continue to have a corporatist kind of a model. The Danes have a negotiated model. The French have a statist model and so forth. And the reason why there hasn't been a full-blown convergence is because there are important institutional and political as well as resource constraints on how much change, what kind of change is possible within these different national contexts.
I wonder how much we can generalize from these cases. I wonder if you can comment. It's not really the heart of the book, but I wonder if you can comment a little bit about whether there is convergence in other democracies, in India or Brazil or Korea. How much global convergence is there in knowledge regimes in other countries that may be more different than the ones that you study?
It's a great question, and I unfortunately don't have an answer for you on this. You know, we tried to stick pretty close to the data in the cases that we had at hand. There's enough variation there for us to work with. I do think that, and I hope very much, that somebody will take this up and try to compare to some of the post-communist countries. Chinese case is absolutely fascinating, I suspect. And let's not forget as well that some kind of knowledge regime is beginning, I think, to form at the transnational level. So, for example, some of the organizations that we talked to during our interviews had either established or started to think about establishing offices in Brussels at the EU level. So it's entirely possible that if we came back and did a comparable study in another 5 or 10 years or so, there would be some pretty important lessons to be gleaned from looking at the transnational level, particularly the EU, but I suspect as well maybe the ASEAN and Mercosur and some of the other regional political economies around the world.
Yeah, I can't think of a better way to end our conversation than a call for some interesting future research to extend some of the findings and conclusions you reach in your book. The book, again, is The National Origins of Policy Ideas, Knowledge Regimes in the United States, France, Germany, and Denmark, published and available through Princeton University Press. John, thank you very much for your time today.
Heath, it was a pleasure. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.